Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
Would you wear your Kildare jersey in Tenerife, for example?
No.
You wouldn't?
Under any circumstances.
Why not, though? You're not proud of
Kildare tattoos, you know.
Subscribe to the Off the Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The Coigig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland women's national team.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
Very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello and welcome to the latest episode of the Coigig Podcast. Kathleen McNamee here, as always, and this week I am joined by a special guest in the one and only Alana Cannan, who we love to have on the podcast every so often to chat all things about the league here and just Irish happenings in general. Alana, how are you?
I have my Lemsip here with me, but I'm okay otherwise than that. What about you?
Between you and Emma Carroll, everyone is sick today. I don't know what it is. There must be something in the air. It's this constant changing weather where, like, at the weekend, it'll be gorgeous and you can sit outside, and then the next minute it's pouring rain and you just don't really know what to dress or what to do.
Yeah.
I'm enjoying it very much. Alana, we had some breaking news today, which kind of skewed all my plans for this top of the show. And that was, after literally just a year of being involved in the Ireland squad and seven caps, Sinead Farrelly has retired from international football. Can you just give me your immediate reaction? I saw it first, the email coming through from the FAI. Where were you? What were you doing? What were you thinking when you saw this?
Yeah, same as that. I came across it on Twitter and you were just thinking, you're devastated to see her go, because we don't have a lot of players like Sinead. So you were just absolutely in awe watching her. Like, the deft touch, the technical ability, the calmness under pressure, and the ability to just split a defence in two. And then all of that, on top of that, she just seemed like a lovely presence, and I'm sure a great person to have around the camp. Such experience. And as I say, coming in nearly a year to the week, definitely the month anyways, so close to World Cup selection, she had to be above and beyond brilliant to get in over the pre-existing players, and she definitely was. I know for some other players, maybe there was always that contention point, like, oh, could we have brought one of the Irish homegrown players over one of these players that surfaced in the year in the lead up to the World Cup? But she definitely was not one of them. It was brilliant to have her, especially on that world stage, and she proved she belonged to be there. Only 8 caps, but it'll mean a lot more to Ireland fans around the world, I'm sure.
Yeah, so her first cap for Ireland came against the US women's national team on the 8th of April. So we're basically like a year and 3 weeks since she made her debut. I won't lie, I was super conflicted when I saw this news today. I obviously know her entire story and the incredibly difficult path she has taken to come back to football. And I do think, as a redemption story, it's incredible. And as you say, she was an absolutely brilliant player for us. And maybe that's partly the reason why I feel this way. But I did feel a tiny bit used in the whole situation, that she came in for the year. And now I know she has had some injury issues the last while, so there could be some of that in play. She didn't really mention anything about that in the statement. But I did kind of think that she would stay for a Nations League campaign, because if you have a dream of playing in a World Cup, a dream of playing for your country at a Euros as well must be semi-high up there. And I know she obviously has a lot of Irish heritage, but growing up in the States, maybe that's different because the Euros aren't the same massive tournament or whatever as they are here. But I did, there was a little bit of me that was just really disappointed. And I think even if you look at Eileen Gleeson's statement, she said the bare minimum.
Yeah, and it also had me wondering, Kathleen, I know, like, you probably remember quite a lot of the camps, like, earlier on towards the World Cup, let's say, Sinead was listed, and then, like you say, for injury reasons or whichever. So you'd wonder when the decision was kind of made, I suppose, would be the thing. But yeah, I don't know. I suppose 8 caps overall, yeah, it's what could have been nearly. But I suppose at the other side of it as well, like, we knew it wasn't going to be forever, given her age profile and having come back into the sport. Yeah, it's just sad to see it end.
Yeah, so I don't actually know, did the FAI publish Eileen Gleeson's comments anywhere other than in the email they sent out to press. But basically it says, I'd like to thank Sinead for her time representing Ireland and we wish her the very best in her career going forward. And that's it. Now, in fairness, Eileen Gleeson did come in after the World Cup and of those 8 games, won't have seen a whole lot of Sinead Farrelly or worked with her a whole lot. But I don't know, I feel like when you have someone that's gone to a World Cup with you in that way and represented you, you have a bit more to say if you're not a little bit put out with the situation. This is also, I have to stress, pure speculation on my behalf. I have no insight to the Irish camp and what the feelings are around this just before someone thinks. I don't want to do a whole like Emma Byrne thing where she said something about a player and the next day it was like Arsenal legend Emma Byrne yeah. says, although I don't think anyone cares about what I think as much as they care about what Emma Byrne thinks. I have a couple of comments here from people who got into us on Twitter at the Koi Gig Pod. If you have any thoughts and you want to get them into us at any stage, we're always liking and replying there. But Eileen said, disappointing really, but if we get Karen in the next squad, it would lighten the blow for us all. So maybe that's why Karen isn't here tonight.
Yeah,
actually we want someone to.
Yeah, we want the we want the, I suppose, the campaign to get started now. Captain Karen Duggan for Ireland again.
I mean, I keep trying to get it going, but she's just not supporting me in this, which I think is very rude. Kim says, great player, but you can't just show up for a tournament and ditch us when it's over. I know injuries have been a struggle, but much more deserving people who have stuck through the highs and lows of not qualifying missed out. Quite unfair. And then Olivia Leonard, girl got her World Cup squad and said, peace emoji, just as people predicted pre-World Cup. She was unbelievable for us, no doubt, but can't help but feel incredibly sorry for Jamie Finn, who has been there every step of the way. So consistent enough feelings from people about this, which I'm not totally surprised. I think there was a lot of nice tributes to her and what she gave us in the World Cup, but I think that's the main thing. People saw the potential of what our midfield could be like with her there. And I'm slightly concerned as to what we're going to do now, Alana, because that was the one area that we said in the England and France games, if we had someone like her there, we would probably be able to play a lot better.
I think that's the thing, especially around that whole conversation you're talking about there, like should, if it was that scenario where someone was trying to get the World Cup, and I mean, anyone would, but you can't really feel so much aggrieved when she was such a brilliant player, you know, like if it was a sake of that there was somebody better than her, fantastic. But maybe that's the kind of, you need to tilt it on its head that way and go, where are we going to start producing this caliber of player here in Ireland? I know Owen Kauser had a piece during the week looking at academies in Ireland and how the league here at home is such a young age. And then even it's a bit of a bookend in between people's careers because maybe they're there, they're trying to get that jump over to England. They might come back then before they retire. But we need to really start looking at, I suppose, our homegrown end of things and see how we're going to get players of that caliber here and get a lot more of them too, because we could do with them, like you say, in the midfield there, especially against the top teams, because we have ways to go there.
Yeah, we definitely do. And as you say, that Owen Kauser piece is really interesting, so it was the first one that I had seen that actually mentioned the women's game in the context of the academy and the academy findings released by the FAI. And I think you know, there's probably a general acceptance that the league here will always be a bit of a feeder league, but I also see a situation in the last while where there's less. I would worry about the amount of talent that we're going to have competing in the WSL in the coming years rather than perhaps a championship or even abroad. Karen and I talked about it a little bit last week, and I think it's important that we do. We don't just focus on the granny rule. It's obviously brought a lot of great players to our shores, but also we need to make sure we're developing it on a basis here. You look at the likes of Tara O'Hanlon, the fact that she's able to go from the league here to City, that's incredible. But why can't there be more of that? There's no reason. We just need the funding to come along with it. We should give a quick word to three players who will hopefully be going to the WSL next year. And that is Abby Larkin, Izzy Atkinson and Hayley Nolan, who all got qualified with Crystal Palace. They had their final day of the league at the weekend there and you got to see them celebrating, which is great news for us because those sort of championship teams, your Birminghams and the like, We want to see a few of those up, especially with the news that Bristol sadly are getting relegated from the WSL. That was confirmed. My old pals. We knew it was coming, but it still hurts so much. So great news for them, Alana.
Yeah, definitely, especially considering that the three Irish players, Hilly Nolan, Izzy Atkinson and Abby Larkin, had actually joined Palace quite recently. When you think about it, Nolan was last summer from London City, Atkinson from West Ham in January, and Larkin the same, but from Glasgow. So brilliant to see them have an impact. I suppose the tempered warning there would be we were equally delighted for Chloe Mustaki last year, when Bristol obviously were promoted and ultimately were three up, two down, Mustaki and Megan Connolly. But yeah, I suppose you have to celebrate the wins when we have them, and delighted for them. Hopefully we can see more Irish talent, as you say, in the top tier of the WSL and keep pushing on that way too.
Yeah, I mean, I enjoyed seeing a team like Crystal Palace getting that promotion, because they actually, in the early days of the Women's League, they actually used to be one of the teams that put quite a lot of money into the game and into their side. And then there was an ownership change and that just completely changed with it. And the team was basically the equivalent of scrapped, and then they kind of came back up again. So it's nice seeing those stories. I challenged Jilly Fowler about it a couple of weeks ago. I personally would like to see one down, two up or something for a couple of seasons, just to give teams more of a chance and also a bit more of a chance to kind of stick in the league for a while, because I think that's important, and that's only going to happen when we have a slightly bigger lead too. But yeah, we shall see what happens. Hopefully they all get to stay on at the club and get to experience the WSL in all its glory, and maybe they'll turn into a Leicester or something rather than a Bristol of, you know, going straight up and then coming straight back down again. But Alana, thank you for mourning the loss of Sinead Farrelly with me. I'm sure we will do plenty more of it throughout this podcast. But now we are going to turn our attention to our team of the week. Now I'm delighted to say we are joined by Emma Carroll to do her team of the week. And Emma, I know you're not feeling great, so we do appreciate you jumping in to do this with us. And I see there's some lovely Irish bias in our team of the week. So would you like to fire away?
Yeah, there could have been more. Courtney Brosnan in goal, four at the back with Casbury, Letizia Finnegan, McCabe. We've got Clinton, Daly and Uecki in the midfield, and then Fowler, England and Hemp up top.
You were saying before we started recording that you had something to say about Mary Fowler, so I will let you have your moment to speak.
I just thought she was brilliant. Like, she started out wide, and in the first half she was the, like, it was a very tough game against Bristol. They really had that block up, and Mary Fowler was the only one that was creating anything. But then I found in the second half, when Crasper came on, Kelly flipped out wide and Fowler went down to the middle, which I kind of thought, looking at the team sheet, that would have been the natural position to start her in anyway. She was just brilliant, like, got the two goals and two really good goals as well. Like, what a strike for the first one, and then the dart across, the real kind of striker bit finish for the second goal as well. I just thought she was outstanding. She's probably player of the weekend for me.
Yeah, I thought she was incredible, and we keep seeing these games from her as well where, because she's not maybe getting the sort of game time that we expect, or to be fair, like, City have quite a lot of strength and depth, that we probably see it more sporadically than we would like to, but it would be great to see her get a proper run and being able to show those skills in the way that we know she has it. And we've seen it with her for the international squad as well. It's terrifying how young she is and how much room there still is there to grow. I certainly would not envy anyone trying to go up against her. Alana, what did you think of this team?
Yeah, I like the spread across the few teams. I suppose you could have had basically the entire City team, really, if you thinking about it. Greenwood and who else did I have thinking as well? Oh yeah, Chloe Kelly, I thought, probably could have been featured, but I appreciate it's given a spread to all teams, because I'm sure they're keeping in check and noting down anything to on the dressing room wall, so that's a fair point there. Elsewhere, probably Katie Zellum, I thought was quite good for United as well. But yeah, pretty solid team overall.
Yeah, I can refer back to the Irish boys as well, because firstly, I was up until about 75 minutes, I probably had Megan Connolly in there. I thought the way Bristol defended, she marshalled the back, captained them, kept them in line, was brilliant. But when you lose 4-0 in the end, it's probably hard to justify it. And then the other one is obviously Courtney in goal again. Outstanding, some really good saves. Unlucky with the Russo goal that her, she pulled off a brilliant save against Betmead, and then it just ricocheted straight back into the path of Russo, which was quite unfortunate. I was kind of arguing and debating with myself whether Leipzig should go in goal, because she hasn't played that much. Like, when you consider that she came in last, like the January before last, keeps Leicester up pretty much. Then Kopp comes in and pretty much takes the number one spot at Leicester. Some reason Leipzig starts ahead of her against United. And again, like, it took a worldie from Ella Toon to beat her. So she probably could have been in with a shout, but my green tinted glasses won out.
It was a relatively difficult weekend, I imagine, to pull together a team, because it's not like there was a whole host of goals. You know, most of the games were 1-0, 1-1, apart from the City game, I think. Yeah. And then you couldn't take any Chelsea players because they were playing against Barca in the Champions League. Quick question on that one, actually, just before we wrap. Who stood out for you the most in that Barca-Chelsea game?
Bamati.
That's fair. I thought
Rolfo was quite good playing for the forward as well. With that difference that Barca made starting Lucy Bronze, which made Badier go over to the other side and meant that Rolfo could get a bit further forward as well. It also kind of gave Caroline Graham Hansen maybe a little bit more freedom as well on the right hand side. But Bonmati is just, yeah.
Bonmati. I mean, yeah.
Said.
I'm still slightly sad that we didn't draw Spain in the Nations League, just so I get to see her run around. But then after watching the few performances that I have so far, I'm like, maybe it's for the best. Are you feeling confident, Emma, against Chelsea during the week?
Yeah, I said to one of the lads in the office today that Emma Hayes might not win anything because Liverpool could do the job on Wednesday night, and that's Chelsea's league gone.
Oh, fighting talk from Emma about the other Emma.
I would be quite sad that Emma Hayes is leaving in her final season without anything, but you know, Liverpool was and everything.
Yeah, I would have said the same until like the last couple of weeks, because I respect her so much, but just some of the stuff she's come out with, I'm just like,
it all got a bit weird.
Yeah. She's undoing the legacy a little bit. Not totally, but just, you know, I don't really know if I agree with them.
Listen, she might win the Olympics, so
there's that. I mean, it wouldn't be a bad year to round it off with an Olympic medal, although knowing how much she hates to lose, she will probably also trash her office or something if she ends this season without a title. Emma, thank you very much for doing that. It's very much appreciated.
Cheers.
Now I'm delighted to say that we are joined by Amy Urshkari to look back on the weekend's action that was. We have our Champions League finalists, and as we said last week, Amy, you can't ever count Barca out.
I mean, do you know what? I think I've been really impressed with them this year, because they didn't kind of come out and sort of tick-a-tack Chelsea to death. They really ground out, like, kind of an ugly win, really, which, you know, maybe in Barca circles is that's not what they want, but I think it's kind of like a step up in sort of mentality from them. I was really impressed, to be honest. I know it was controversial, the circumstances, and you can say all that, but yeah, I was surprised. I was impressed.
I suppose it's something that we haven't seen or had to have seen from this Barcelona team all that much in the last couple of seasons, because they have been so dominant, and it's rare that we get the opportunity to see them go up against a team that is at their level and puts it to them, puts them to the sword to the point where they have to play a little bit dirty and a little bit ugly.
Yeah, and I think if you look at Chelsea in the semi-final last year, I think they were kind of quite a bit more mature in their game plan. I mean, I don't think they played great in the second leg. And I think Jess Carter kind of spoke about, like, we just gave the ball away too much, and, you know, that's definitely true. But if you look at them, they don't have to play that conservative sit-back tactic so often in England, because they're so dominant, kind of what you were just saying about Barca. But so it's slightly new to them. And I think they showed improvements in doing it this year compared to last. And they're definitely a step closer to kind of getting over the line. But it's just so tough. I think people underestimate how tough it is to kind of like they've spent so long trying to close that gap. And yeah, I think Barca probably deserved to win the tie, but I think there was kind of positive signs for Chelsea.
What was it that Barca got so right that they didn't manage to do against Chelsea the week before? Because, or even was it Chelsea that they had just maybe used a lot of the energy and the tactical decisions that they had? I know it's kind of hard to discuss this with the results and with the decisions that were given, because that's such a dominant part of the narrative.
I think if you look at the equalising goal, I think you can kind of look at snapshots of the tie, right? I think the equalising goal from Bonmatí is like a real moment of quality. I know it takes a deflection off Buchanan, but like to create the space the way that she does is, I mean, it's world class. And then, you know, Chelsea just kind of, they get, like I just said, they gave the ball away too much. Like there was points where you sit there and they kind of dealt with some danger and just kind of kicked it straight back to Barcelona, and it needed to stick. And they didn't. I think they missed Ramirez massively in that sense to just make the ball stick. Like, but like you say, it's quite difficult because of that 10 versus 11. I would have been, I tweeted this as a neutral. It kind of spoiled it because I really wanted to see how, like, at halftime, I was like, this is set up so perfectly, 45 minutes, who's going to make the Champions League final? You know, you don't know who's, you know, how it's going to be decided or anything. And then that kind of ruined that, yeah, that kind of anticipation problem, I think.
Yeah, Lana, there definitely was that feeling if you were watching this game as a neutral that you wanted to see these two teams, two of the best teams in Europe, go toe-to-toe for the entire game. Let Hayes have the sort of send-off in the Champions League, if it was going to be a send-off that wasn't marred by some sort of controversial refereeing decision. Her comments after the fact probably didn't help it because it added more fuel to the fire, but it would have been nice to have had 11v11 for the entire game.
Yeah, it definitely would have. And I'd say it was nearly written in the stars, and then that was all kind of scrapped and thrown out the window. They sold out Stamford Bridge, Emma Hayes' last game there. The 1-0 win away to come home then, and you really were hoping nearly as a neutral just that they would see it out, just to see something different. Just as well, on what we were talking about earlier, like how they kind of, it wasn't really a pretty result. It might have been an ugly one, but it was the result from Barca. To add to that, did anyone see Emma Byrne's commentary over Bonamati going off? And then, so Emma's like, oh, she's injured. She might need a stretcher here. And then Bonamati runs over to Patellas to give her a high five before she runs onto the pitch. So I think that tells you everything you need to know about the Barcelona performance in one way, because, you know, they're just pure on the wind-up, but it worked well for them. And I'm sure they're the happier victors coming away with the win there on that one.
Oh, yes, I imagine they are very happy and also very relieved, because it's not a position that they're used to going into these games, you know, having to come back from a deficit. Amy, we also had the other semi-final there with Lyon getting past PSG. And again, another great game. Samuel Bakker getting that third minute goal, and you thought, oh, are Lyon going to run away with this now? Chouinga coming back in it, and then 81 minute goal from De Mornay to seal it for Lyon, just to make sure that it was definitely going to be theirs. It was good.
Yeah, I was really impressed with De Mornay in the game as well. Like 20 years old, you know, first season at Lyon, massive sort of kind of pressure to play for a club like that, and, you know, the biggest game of their season so far. I mean, she kind of stepped up. She was the best player on the pitch, I thought. So I thought it was deserving that she kind of won the game with the second goal on the night anyway. But yeah, I'm really excited for the final actually as well, because that feels like there's a rivalry building there between Lyon and Barca, and it's been quite spicy before. So yeah, I'm really excited to see how that one goes this year.
100%, because you kind of have Barca prematurely probably crowned as the new champions of Europe, and Lyon were on their way out. And then, of course, Lyon came back and proved that they weren't going anywhere, and we should all pay a bit more attention to them, no matter what was going on behind the scenes. So it'll definitely be interesting to see. Turning attention now to the WSL, where there wasn't a whole lot of goals, we have to say, over this weekend compared to the Champions League. So we had 3-1-1 draws. 1-1 win and 1-4 win. Manchester City, the only ones that decided that we deserve to see a few goals after the Champions League. We'll start with Everton and Arsenal yesterday in what was an interesting game, in that the first goal wasn't scored until the 80th minute and Arsenal thought they had got away with them. And then Izzy Hobson jumps up Alana, local gal, 16-year-old, playing for her club. Perfect fairy tale story to get that goal against Everton, or against Arsenal, I should say.
And only 16 years old as well. I actually hadn't realised that until I looked it up after. But yeah, definitely, because seeing as the game, like Arsenal obviously probably dominated for quite a lot of it, but then to score so late, Everton still in it, like that's stuff of dreams there, 95th minute, to come away with the draw, like you could but be delighted for, I think, in that circumstance.
I don't know, Alana. I'm an Arsenal supporter and I wasn't that delighted.
Maybe not for your sightings.
Pretty bad result, all things considered, as to how their season is going. You know, they're no title on the line anymore. That early Champions League exit, they kind of really needed a good run in the last couple of games. You know, they play City this weekend. You wanted that good run in of games to just cement that, no, we're not losing touch with Chelsea and City, but it kind of feels like they have.
If you're not a competitive run down the stretch, you know, you're probably, you can say you're as motivated as you would be, but realistically, you're probably not as much. But yeah, I see what you're saying, that maybe they're pulling away from the top teams a touch. But please, Cathy. Yeah. That's what they'll be saying, I'm sure.
I'm not all that excited about having the Conti Cup, though. I want a WSL title or an FA Cup title, or not even an FA Cup, to be honest, or a Champions League title. That's in my mind. Amy, what did you think about this, from Arsenal not being able to break down Everton until so long and then conceding in those dying moments?
I think it's kind of what we've seen from Arsenal a lot of the season, just not putting chances away, right? Like, I was kind of having this conversation with somebody the other day. Like, they have so many great attacking pieces that, you know, you look at them on paper and they should score a lot of goals, but they just cannot find the back of the net some days. And those days seem to come quite often. I think one thing with Arsenal, though, like, a lot of the time when you speak to players that have come back from an ACL, they say sometimes it takes like 6 months to feel like yourself again. And I think if you look at Arsenal's, you know, ACL club, you know, Miedemar and Mead specifically in terms of that attacking unit, like, and not having them for large parts of the season and then not having them at their best because they're coming back from ACL, it's probably not all clicking in the right place as well. So I think if I was delivering a message of hope to you as an Arsenal fan, is that over time, building into pre-season with the players back and fully fit and having time to work together, I would think and I would hope, if I was an Arsenal fan, that things would click more and they would look more dangerous as a unit, because we've seen glimpses of it, right? I mean, look at their big game record this season. Like, they've turned up and beaten Chelsea, beaten Man City, beaten Man United. So it's just that putting chances away on a consistent basis is sort of lack.
I think as well, possibly Arsenal fans got, not impatient is the wrong word, but, you know, the likes of Beth Mead, Leo Williamson came back and it seemed like they were back to normal. But as the season has gone on, we've seen that there's a bit more inconsistency in that form, which is totally understandable considering the injuries that they've both had to come back from and what they have gone through to get there. I'm just incredibly impatient and I want to see this Arsenal team firing on all fronts, because I think the capacity is 100% there. And if you look at the squad, it's totally measurable to the other ones. It's just frustrating that those injuries are still a little bit of a lingering issue for them. But hopefully next season, as you say, Amy, once they've had a little bit of preseason time, quick jaunt over to Australia will help them all recover beautifully, I'm sure. Alana, Manchester United glancing by Leicester City, Elatoon getting an 83rd minute shot against them there. I've been quite impressed with Leicester in general this season. This is probably one of those games where it can go 50-50 for United, whether they actually manage to get that goal that means they get all 3 points.
Yeah, definitely. I think a bit of a get out of jail free card with the Elatoon Thunderbolts altogether. If they didn't have that, you'd probably be saying kind of the same thing as to with Arsenal, you know, that they need to be putting away these games if they're to be challenging properly. Obviously, now fourth place, 3 points against above Liverpool in fifth. But yeah, if they're to break into that top tier again, let's say, they'd want to be, I suppose, putting up a better showcase. But yeah, I'd say Leicester obviously are coming on leaps and bounds on the other side of things. And I'm sure they'll have been happy to have put on the performance, but yeah, once again, not getting a result on that one.
And you got to kind of feel sorry for Leipzig a little bit, because he did quite well with a lot of the shot. I think there were something like 21, 22 shots in total that she had to deal with, and there wasn't really anything that you could do about that Ella Toon shot.
Absolutely. And it was near post as well, is the other thing. Like, you know, she was, you'd nearly think if you're hitting it, that the way she was angled, that it'd be going the far corner. It came the other side. I don't know what you thought about it, Amy.
No, I agree. I was kind of like, you know, watching the Champions League at the same time and just keeping up to date across Twitter of, you know, the goals going in. And yeah, when that one came up, it was definitely one of the better ones that I saw on my timeline while I was giving a little side scroll.
Yeah, I think, I suppose for someone like Toon, if you're an England supporter or a Manchester United one as well, it's the sort of goals that you want to see her scoring, even if it is towards the latter ends of the season, because she's had a difficult enough season, as has the entirety of Manchester United. And I think that's the little like spark that they want her to find to get back, and the little bit of a, I suppose, the magic that she had, especially that summer of the Euros for England and what preceded it, and proceed as well with the club. So if I'm sure Karen Duggan is sitting somewhere being like, Kathleen, say nice things about Manchester United. But like Alana, you're totally right in terms of they're going to need to do a lot more to keep track. Like Arsenal are on 34 points at the moment and United are on 35. So there is still a sizable enough gap there if you want to start challenging for the Champions League. And we thought they were going to do that last year and then sold some key players and that did not happen. And also with the likes of Spurs and Liverpool breathing down their throats as well, they're going to want to get on a move and sign some excellent star players. Amy, going to look at Spurs. So they had a draw against Brighton, and they also have that FA Cup final that's just a fortnight away. Good character from them on the day.
Yeah, I think it was, you know, it was quite an evenly matched game. I think Brighton are probably a better side than their sort of the table says and their season says. You know, it's been a bit of a weird season for them, but they got some really good players, and they got, you know, Elizabeth Taylor, and what a season she's having. Like the numbers that she's put up for a team that's gone up and down, struggled, like she deserves massive credit. And I think when you've got a player like that that can kind of put the ball in the back of the net, you know, at a drop of a hat, then you're always in with the chance of getting a decent result.
It's funny how many of the goals this weekend as well all came as like 80th minute or 81st minute equalizers. It seemed to be a bit of a theme of the weekend, Alana. It's interesting, Amy, what you're saying there about like Brighton being a different or a better team than possibly the table says. This is something we used to talk to Emma Byrne about quite a bit. So obviously she would know the Brighton team quite well and be in and around them. And she would say she always wasn't sure what was the little missing thing, because on paper they do a lot of things very well, but it seems like they find it really hard to build a cohesive, consistent team that can actually go on a good run of form.
I think some of it comes down to pace as well. I think, you know, to sack Mel Phillips this season, probably it certainly blindsided a lot of people that, you know, watch WSL every week, because like it just takes time to climb that table, and it takes time to put all the pieces together, and it's a tricky league, and you get, you know, especially when you're kind of outside of the really consistent sort of top two really this season, you are going to drop points here, there and everywhere. Like that's just the way the league is. I think it just needs patience and a project, and get a manager in that you're going to sort of stick with for a few years and build something, because, you know, they are a better team than the table suggests when you actually look at the quality in the squad and look at that on paper. It's the pieces are there to put together something better than what we've seen this season, but, you know, when you're chopping and changing coaches, then it definitely doesn't help. So they just need to find the right person to take them forward. I think that's the issue.
What sort of coach do you think it is that they need, like, of the characters that are in the WSL or even around European or American football at the moment?
Yeah, I think they just need to find somebody who's done something quite impressive. As you know, you look around and find somebody who has developed over time, you know, a great group of players, maybe picks off, you know, players from not so much the top manager at Lyon or whatever, spent a lot of money to, you know, make a squad, somebody that can work against the, like, big teams, you know, kind of pick people up, not on the cheap as if, like, they're not going to invest, but, you know, you're not going to be able to attract the biggest star if you're not playing Champions League. Look at somebody who can kind of develop the young players and bring them through, because Brighton have, you know, really good sort of structure of bringing those young players through. And somebody that you can just kind of roll with. Like, you don't need to bring in a massive, huge name. You can bring in somebody who's got a lot of potential to grow with the squad. And I think, you know, the way that the club kind of builds, there's a lot of potential there with the investment that they've put in. Like I just said about the way they bring young players in and some of the scouting they've done and players that they've brought in is really good as well. You just need to find the coach that's kind of going in the same direction as all the other stuff is at the club. And, you know, they could do really good things in this league.
That's the thing that's always confused me about Brighton is they seem to have a massive amount of patience when it comes to growing, like, players or individuals within the squad. But when it comes to the managerial side of things, there's less of that patience there. But I suppose it's probably easier when you're putting more resources into developing, say, a couple of different people compared to just one. It's probably easier to put any failure or the games that you feel like you should have won on that person rather than where more of your resources and more of your money is going, so it's more likely to make you look a little bit stupid. But that's just a pure outside observation. Alana, West Ham made sure that they secured themselves in the league and that Bristol City were going down with a 95th minute equaliser in today's episode of How Late Can You Score an Equaliser? If you're West Ham, how are you reflecting on this season? I mean, I'm sure it was just a breath of relief for the entire squad when they realised that they didn't have to worry anymore. It seemed pretty likely it was going to be Bristol, but you never know in these situations. Rhianne Skinner, what does she have to do over the next couple of weeks and months to get this West Ham team's confidence up? Because at the start of the season, you know, we were all saying this is a team that could do something really good in the league, and here we are.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of built on that. Like, obviously they do have players who can do it for them. It's about getting them to show up every day. Even, like, let's say from an Ireland perspective, like Jessu was really good for them at the weekend and has been throughout the season. But coming back to the ACL chat, you know, she's only back fully this year, and it'll take her time to fully implement that way too. But yeah, they obviously made some signings in the January window. I'm sure they'll be looking to do the same again now come the summer, but they'll definitely will have to strengthen that way, because, you know, as I say, to only secure that one 95th minute, I'd say your heart wouldn't be able for it. I don't know how you'd calm the nerves with that one.
And Amy, finally, we have Manchester City absolutely hammering Bristol in what is a sad confirmation of their relegation from the WSL. I have a particular soft spot for Bristol. I just love the way that their fans have supported them despite having such a difficult season. And then, of course, we have our Irish representation in there too, which we like to see.
Yeah, I think I'm intrigued to see how they get on after this now, because they have a really young squad, they have a young manager, they've done really good things at kind of building the fan base. I think it was confirmed after the game that they'll play their games at Ashton Gate again next season. So they're building something good, and, you know, relegation doesn't have to be the end of that. I think at the start of the season they were going to be up against it, and, you know, you just spoke about there along West Ham signing players in January. I think that's kind of the difference, really. Like, Bristol couldn't go out and get this and Katrina Graham, you know, players like that. I know that not Mewis has probably not had the impact because of injuries, and but you could tell, like, Gorrie really kind of boosted West Ham when, you know, she was fit, and Bristol just couldn't kind of go out and get that caliber of player to help drive them towards safety. And but they, like I said, they've got a really young squad, a young manager, and I think if they can keep those young players, because that's the thing, I think if I'm a, you know, a mid-table, you know, maybe even a little bit higher WSL club, I'm probably looking at Bristol going down and thinking, I wonder if we can get, you know, X, Y, Z, those players. you know, they'd be a good addition because there's some quality players in there. I mean, I've watched them. They, you know, they're a good team with some good play, like good components. So if they can keep it together, then, you know, they'll certainly hope with everything they're building that they can come back.
I think that's a frustrating thing with Bristol, watching them. There was a couple of times this season where they had the game in the palm of their hand and they were going to get a point or maybe even 3 points, and they just let it slip. And it wasn't like they were getting absolutely annihilated week in, week out. This is probably one of the bigger results that they've seen. A lot of the scores were quite close.
Yeah, and this was close until 60 minutes. It took Mary Fowler, you know, finding, you know, top corner from the edge of the box to break the deadlock. Like, you know, City couldn't kind of put their chance. They couldn't really create it too much in the first half. Second half, they just, you know, they create a lot, but kind of a bit of luck on Bristol's goal for a little bit. Yeah, I've seen some games this season where I'm like, oh, you know, they're going to get a point here. And maybe that comes down to inexperience a little bit with it being a young squad. You know, they've got some good experience there, like Rachel Furness and stuff like that, but there are a lot of young players in there, and, you know, maybe that's part of it, but also it's part of the experience of just being a professional footballer, I guess, and learning. And that experience will do a lot of them good in a way, like in the cold light of day, maybe not right now when they've been relegated and they're not particularly happy. And, but I think it's an experience that can certainly benefit a young player just in terms of mentality and coming back and learning.
Mm-hmm. I mean, in terms of the team that they will be waving at on their way down, Chris Palace being brought up, we had a bit of a chat about them at the start of the show, just in the context of the Irish players. But for anyone listening who maybe doesn't get the opportunity here in Ireland to watch all that much championship, what can they expect from this Crystal Palace team coming into the league?
Well, do you know what? I'm interested to find out, because I think making that step up, because, you know, we can talk about how they've played in the championship and that's great. You look at how Bristol did in the championship last season and they did really well. But making that jump is, you know, it's about what's the club going to do in terms of, like, is it, you know, total turnover, pardon me, of their squad, or is it just adding a few pieces here and there? Like, what pieces do they add? You know, do they add sort of seasoned WL experience? You know, do they, you know, get a lot of unproven talent? Like, it's such a big summer to try and stay in the league, because it is difficult and it's getting more difficult. I think I remember writing at some point during this season that the team promoted from the Championship hadn't been relegated, like, on the first go in quite a while, actually, when you think about, you know, Villa, Spurs, Leicester, Man United. So, but it is kind of showing that it is getting more difficult because of those really big names that are coming in. So I think the club does need to invest and just make sure that squad is ready to play in the WSL, because it will be tight at the bottom, and it's just about how they best prepare that team to be able to stay in, because there's clearly a good team. I mean, look, they've won the championship, they've got great players in there and they played well all season, but it is just about preparing it for the top flight.
Yeah, I think even they were kind of admitting that themselves whenever they had won it at the weekend, you know, kind of saying, we will celebrate and enjoy this for the moment, but we know there's a lot of hard work ahead. And even there was a feature in the Irish Times here with Hayley Nolan and her dream of playing in the WSL. And she was saying, you know, I can't exactly go and lie on a beach for the summer and then go up against Chelsea's best players like the Sam Kerrs and Beth Meads or whoever it is of the world and just expect to be fine. She's like, I know I have a long, hard summer ahead of me, but we'll enjoy it. We'll let them enjoy it for like at least another couple of days and then think about the hard work. Amy, thank you so much for joining us. We really do appreciate it. And Alana, you too. I look forward to crying over Sinead Farrelly's international retirement with you in person soon. If anyone wants to get me, you can get me on Twitter and I will also commiserate with you. You can also get the podcast at the Koi Gig Pod on Twitter. We are always replying to people there and answering any questions you may or may not have. The Koi Gig Podcast on the Ball is sponsored by Cadbury, official snack partner to Republic of Ireland Women's National Team. Thank you all very much for listening, and we will be back very soon.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland Women's National Team.